Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm Belinda Ellsworth, and we have a great show in store for you today. I have one of Ann Arbor's own, Paul Saginaw, with me today from Zingerman's. Paul Saginaw and Ari Weinzweig joined forces to found Zingerman's Delicatessen and opened the doors on March 15th of 1982. All they wanted at that time was a great corned beef sandwich and an organization with soul. Zingerman started as 1,300 square feet of combined restaurant and specialty food retail space run solely by Paul and Ari and two employees. The Zingerman's community of businesses now has 23 partners, employs over 750 people, and generates over $60 million in annual sales from 10 separate businesses, including Zingerman's Delicatessen, which also includes their catering, Zingerman's Mail Order, Zingerman's Bakehouse, Zingerman's Training, Zingerman's Coffee Company, Zingerman's Roadhouse, Zingerman's Creamery, Zingerman's Candy Manufactory, Zingerman's Corn Man Farms, and Miss Kim. Paul believes that he has been successful in spite of the fact that he has limited natural talent and abilities because he has always thought the only real limits are those of vision. It's my pleasure to welcome Paul to the show today. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Happy to be here in my happy place.
Oh, well, thank you so much for joining us today. So why don't you take a moment and just fill in some of that space? That's been an incredible journey with Zingerman's. And so why don't you just fill in maybe some of the details for folks, some of the highlights along that journey?
Sure, I'd be glad to. When we first opened, we had a vision that we said that we wanted to be unique. And for us, that meant there'd only be one of us. And certainly, you know, expanding using a traditional model of replication is a well-proven business model, but that wasn't interesting to us. We really wanted to, one, we wanted to stay local and be part of the community and go deep into the community. And it seemed like it was going to be much more fun to be unique and just work at getting better and better. We also wanted to have an organization where decisions were not made based on who had the most authority, but rather who had a good idea, who had a solution to a problem we were dealing with, who had information and data that was relevant to the issue at hand. And so we wanted to push out decision-making as widely as we could into the organization and invite everybody to participate in help running the business and to have everybody understand and believe that they were personally responsible for the business. And the other part of that initial vision was we made the strategic decision that we were going to source this food and prepare this food and deliver it to people with a very, very high level of customer service. This was 1982, and customer service was really not something people talked about in the way they do today. If you went to the bookstore back in 1982 and you went to the business section and you wanted a book on customer service, you probably wouldn't find it in the business section and you would have to special order it, and most likely it would be an academic publication. Today there's dozens of books on customer service, but back in 1982, customer service was the return department, and it was only everything that happened after a sale. But we were going to introduce a lot of new products to folks that were a lot different than what they were used to paying and seeing. So if you were used to buying a half gallon of Heinz white distilled vinegar for $1.99, and we were going to offer you a aged balsamic vinegar, a small bottle for $25, we're going to have to kind of get you interested in the experience of coming in the store so we could get you to taste that. And so we wanted the coming to our store to be this wonderful experience where we were going to educate you and you were going to go on this food journey with us. And so, and then moreover, we wanted to extend that level of service to each other within the organization and to the community. And that was really all part of what our initial vision was. And things went along really well for the first 10 years or so. And then I started to feel that there were things not quite right in the working environment. It wasn't the happy place that we wanted it to be. And sales were flattening out and profitability was down. And there didn't seem to be the same esprit de corps. And we really wanted to be able to provide a very robust benefits package. We had always provided health insurance and paid vacation, but we really wanted to be able to provide the opportunity for financial and professional growth for the folks that were working for us. And we were a larger organization now, and we had a formal leadership team, and it was a nice place to work, and there wasn't a lot of turnover in that team. And so if you were up and coming, we didn't have a lot of room for you to go. And so we were pondering that question. My partner, Ari, and I, one day I dragged him outside and I sat him down on the black bench in front of the deli that's still there. And I said, okay, we've been at this for 10 years. 10 years from now, what do we look like? And Ari said, why are you bothering me? I got work to do. And I said, well, this is our work. And he goes, no, I got, you know, the dishwasher called in sick, the cooler's broken, the lunch rush is going to start. I got real work to do. And I said, well, this is our real work. The pressures in a business are very, very real. Get the product in, get it priced, prepare the food, deliver it to the customer, ring the customer up. All of those are very real pressures, but somebody has to be looking out to the future saying, you know, this is who we are, this is what we're good at, and this is where we're going. It's a debt that we owe to the folks in the organization. When you have a large group of people that get up every day and come in and put out their best efforts, then that's a gift. That's the gift of followership. And in return for that gift, you owe those folks a debt. And part of that debt is to provide a workplace that is safe, and people feel really good about putting out their efforts. And another part of it is a legacy of guiding principles saying this is how we're going to behave with each other without exception. And a really big part of it is an attractive, achievable, inclusive vision of the future saying this is where we're going. It's going to be really great. And this is the part that you know, you can come up and play in this. And so we started a conversation, a dialogue, an argument, you know, that lasted a year. And we came up at the end with our first long range vision. It was a 15-year vision. This was 1994. And so this vision was going to take us to 2009. And we said we wanted to provide the opportunity for ownership in the brand to the people that worked for us. So if you were entrepreneurial and you were passionate about a product or a service and you wanted to operate according to our guiding principles, then we would finance that business with you and we would partner with you and we would create this community of businesses where we would be customers and suppliers of each other. But you had to go for greatness. You had to go for improving the quality of something we were doing. And that's what we did. So other than Ari and myself, everybody, all the other 21 partners now, all started as regular employees, and now they're our partners. And that's really how we grew the organization. Ari and I didn't go and seed ideas out to people and say, hey, you know, we think charcuterie is going to get really big, and Judy, why don't you think about running this business? We wanted you to come forward and say, this is something I'm really passionate about. I would really love to do it as part of Zingerman's, but I'm so passionate about it. If you guys don't want to do it, I'll probably be gone off on my own in a year or so to do it. That's the level of passion that we were looking for. And that's really how we grew.
That's awesome. And there's some really great points in there. And I think the biggest one for everyone is that people get so wrapped up in the mundane tasks of the day-to-day operations with any business. And it's easy to do, just like you said, Ari was saying, I've got work to do. But recognizing that the long-term vision and setting aside time for that, dreaming a little bit, thinking a little bit, planning a little bit, being creative, that's equally as important to the overall success of any organization. And I think that's what stagnates people and companies, is that they don't take that time to set aside that really important piece of what's equally as important as operations of how you're going to grow. And I think that's where companies do become stagnant and then stay at that place. And I love it also that you shared with us that at that 10-year mark, you had sort of flatlined, because I think people look at a success story like yours and they think, oh, it was just easy, or oh, it just everything continued to move for them. And people have to understand that every single organization flatlines along the way, and it's where it's really important then to take everyone and say, okay, where is this going? What are we going to do? And have that long-term vision. I believe, because I've trained on vision for a very long time, that that's probably the number one thing missing from most organizations. So I so appreciate you sharing all of that with us.
Well, I agree with you. We often talk about the difference between working in the business and working on the business. And in the business are the day-to-day tasks that are required in order to, you know, keep everything going. But working on it is pulling yourself back and imagining where it is that you want to go and why you're doing it. And when we talk about vision, the vision is the what and the why of who you are and what you're going to do. And it's not how you're going to get there. And folks do get caught up in how to do things and how you're going to get there. And when you start from that spot, it limits how robust your vision of the future can be. And we ask people to, when they think about visioning, to do it without being trapped in the present day reality. And it's hard for folks because most organizations, I think, get together when they want to talk about where the business is going, and they'll call it strategic planning. And really for us, the strategy is how you're going to do something. And what happens often is that in organizations, there's a lot of conflict when they start to talk about strategy, and they think they're arguing about the best way to get somewhere, but really they're arguing because one person thinks they're going over to here and the other person thinks they're going somewhere different. And you're never going to come together on the strategy. If in my vision, Zingerman's was going to be a $2 million company, and in Ari's vision, it was going to be an $80 million company, and we didn't share that with each other, and then we tried to develop a strategy, we were never going to come to an agreement, because those are two very, very different companies. It's not that one's right and one's wrong. It's just they're very different. And so what you're going to do every day is going to be very different. And so we do ask folks to step back and really think about where it is that they want to be, and then get everybody else excited and engaged in that. I think what's hard is if we don't know each other and we find that we got on a plane over at Detroit Metro and we have a flight to San Francisco and we find ourselves sitting next to each other, and I turn to you and I say, so Belinda, what's your idea of a beautiful world? You know, you're going to get your headphones out as quickly as you can, you know, and say, why is this guy, you know, I'm sitting next to this nut who's going to bug me and feel very uncomfortable. I said, man, can you believe the political process this year? Can you believe the clown show that's going on? You and I are going to be two perfect strangers that are going to bond with each other, and the time is going to fly while we talk about everything that we're frustrated about and angry about and disgusted with. And that's easy to do. But when someone's asking you, you know, what your vision is of a beautiful world or what would you really like, we're embarrassed and it feels awkward. We feel childish talking about it. If you ask a little kid, what would be a much better world? They'd have no trouble. They'd say mommy and daddy don't work that all the time and they don't fight and people aren't hungry and people aren't shooting each other, you know, because it hasn't been beaten into them that you have to imagine a future starting with your rational, logical mind. If you want to have a robust vision of where you want your organization or your life to go, it's really informed by your values, your heart, and not by your rational thinking. Eventually, you're going to have to use your rational thinking because the vision, you want the vision to be very, very inspirational. You want to capture your imagination and the folks that you want to help you get there. You want to capture their imagination. And what captures that is when we believe we're working for something much greater than ourselves. But it also has to be, strategically sound because we are all governed by the rules of the marketplace. So you could have the most idyllic, utopian idea of this organization that you want, but if it's not grounded in a marketplace reality, then that's just a fantasy, and a fantasy is not going to drive a company toward long-range success. So we say that it needs to be inspiring and strategically sound and then documented and widely communicated.
That was awesome. And at the end of the day, I think when you were talking about that whole, what's your idea of a beautiful world, it's that people just really don't allow themselves to dream. They don't allow themselves to think bigger than what their reality is. And I think that there's so much fear and doubt with people on if that's even a possibility, that they don't allow themselves to live in that space. And I know this because we've done a lot of surveys on why people don't set goals today. And there's just so much fear of, I want something that's certain. I want the real thing that I know that can happen. And so they just cut themselves off of what all the possibilities are because they just don't allow themselves to live in that space of, you know, dreaming big, having a bigger vision. So you just shared so much amazing information. I hope all of our listeners are taking notes and go back and listen to it again because there was some fantastic information in there. So why don't you share with us now a little bit about how this business over these 30 plus years has shaped your lifestyle?
It has certainly kept me in Ann Arbor, and I'm married for 40 years to a wonderful woman who grew up on the West Coast and never imagined herself living where there would be winter. So it's shaped in that way. I'd say because it's kept me very young thinking, you know, in food service, for the majority of your employees are pretty much between the age of 18 and 30. So it keeps you young and thinking young. It's allowed me to eat some of the world's best food and really appreciate what an affordable luxury great food is. Certainly I get more joy out of a incredible piece of wonderful Roquefort cheese than I would, I don't know, a day on a yacht somewhere that I've never had. So I get to eat really, really well. In the business that we're in the food business that we're in, and at the level that, you know, that we occupy, you don't find, it's just not populated with jerks. Because the people that are in business doing this, you're not going to generate a lot of wealth. I'm certainly not, you know, crying poverty. You can have a very good life, but you're not an investment banker. You're not going to have a high tech company that you're going to ramp up and then scale up and then sell out and get rich. You're going to have a pretty modest salary, but you're working with just great people because the folks you're working with are doing it out of love. So I found that the people in this industry are extremely generous. we're in the hospitality business. So if you're not generous, you shouldn't be in the business to begin with. But they're very generous with their information and their experience and their knowledge. And it's provided a wonderful life. You travel, you meet folks, you eat great food. And we hire a lot of people, and because we're asking everybody to be responsible for running the business, you're really watching people develop. And it's no different than watching your children grow up and become responsible and start to have their accomplishments. We have folks that come that can have a hard time delivering a glass of water to a table, and then a few years later, they're running a $4 million department, and very little can give you that much joy.
That's right. So what do you think two of your greatest skill sets are? If you were to really hone down and find one or two that you think have been really helpful in contributing to the overall success, what would you think that is?
Wow. I think that I'm good at allowing people to get past their own self-limiting expectations so that they can accomplish things that they didn't think possible. I think that I'm good at identifying what people's motives are by being curious and asking lots of questions and then encouraging them to take action on those motives. I think I'm optimistic and I'm a risk taker, and that has certainly helped. And I have a belief that there is such a thing as having enough. And when you get your head around the idea of having enough, then it's one of the most liberating feelings that you can have. And it allows you to be generous and allows you to experiment and it allows you to innovate. So having a spirit of, abundance, a mindset of abundance and generosity and being very, very optimistic has helped me. And I think that those are the gifts that I was lucky enough to be given.
That was fantastic. I know when I do a lot of consulting with companies and I go in and they want to look at how are we going to make this bigger? And it's within, honestly, usually a 45-minute discussion that it comes down to this scarcity mindset or abundance mindset. And a lot of people have a hard time even seeing the difference in those. But when you are talking with someone and you're trying to help them to grow their organization or grow their company, and they have this scarcity mindset, it doesn't matter about all the details that you do in the middle, because it's just very difficult to get past that because it's so limiting. And I really think that that's one thing that a lot of entrepreneurs don't recognize within themselves as even a weakness. And so the fact that you're recognizing that as one of your greatest strengths, I think that's incredible. And I hope that people take notice of that.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time in the nonprofit sector, and I've been on boards, and I've certainly been on development committees where you're going around asking folks for money. I mean, there were points in my life where I was doing it so much that I'd walk down Main Street and I'd see somebody and they'd cross the street because they were probably afraid that I was going to ask them for another donation for something. But what I found is there are folks that of modest means that they believe they're wealthy beyond, all expectation, and they're ready to give what they can to another good cause. And then there's folks that are very, very wealthy, but I call them their counters. Every day they get up to count, how much they have, and they always feel like they don't have enough, and they're not that happy. They're not as happy as the people of modest means that just are happy with, they feel gifted and privileged and fortunate every day they wake up.
That's absolutely right. Oh, gosh, the wise words. So tell us about a challenge or an obstacle that you have faced and then how you guys worked through that.
Well, I'd say every day I'm facing challenges. I have a lot of partners, and they're entrepreneurs. And you don't get to be entrepreneurial and to be a partner running a business because you don't have very strong opinions. And so the parts of an entrepreneur's personality that allows them to forge ahead those are the same that can make them kind of prickly when they're trying to get along with the other partners. And so my challenges are, Ari and I are partners in each one of the businesses. And each one of those businesses, though, have managing partners. And they don't own the other businesses. They're not partners in them. And so we're really separate. We're 10 separate legal entities, but we behave as one. But it's easy for me to see that, how we are one. But when if you're the managing partner of the deli, your world is a bit smaller. And so as an organization, we have resources that are in limited supply. So how do you balance those between all of the businesses? We have a shared service group so that administrative and technical support is a shared service, HR, payroll, benefits administration, IT, marketing and graphics, customer service, donations, community chest, and construction project management. That's all in the center. And so when you have a shared services model, the folks that are paying for it always feel like they're paying too much and getting too little, and they're right part of the time, because part of the time somebody's getting more because they need that focus. So the biggest challenge is balancing the resources that we have with all of the different needs in the organization. I mean, that's an ongoing thing. If your question was more about a specific incident where there was a crisis at hand, or I guess I'd have to think a little more about that.
Do you know, that's okay, because I think that the answer that you gave is obviously top of mind. And a lot of people do give like one particular crisis or incident, but I think it was a very honest answer in that how you deal with it on a day-to-day basis. And the thing that I really would love, I hope our listeners took out of that, is that people feeling like they're not getting what's necessarily the most at that time. Like, it's not their turn. Do you know what I mean? And it's never going to always be 100% on one person when you have a shared equity of resources. And so I just think that that's important when people are listening to this and they might be in that same situation, is it's not your turn today, but it very well could be your turn tomorrow. But everybody collaborating together is going to make for a stronger organization and eventually their particular business model as well. So I loved your answer, and I think that hopefully people will take some great insights from that. So what advice would you give to people who want to be entrepreneurs and want to sort of go down this path of having their own business?
Well, I would say, first off, when folks are thinking of the business that they want, number one is start out with a vision, which is we defined it, a vision as it's a written definition of what success looks like to you at some point in the future. And that it's absolutely essential that that's where you start. And it's a written narrative, and it's written in the future as if it's already happened. And it's as if you are floating on a magic carpet above your city and you're looking down at your business. And what are all the elements, the activities, the things that are going on that would indicate to you that you've been successful and you're as proud as you could possibly be? That is your definition of success. In the absence of that, you can start a business and you can go on an emotional roller coaster. One day the sales calls are coming in and everything's doing great. And, oh, wow, this was the best idea I ever have. I'm so happy I did that. And then the next day your accountant quits and your biggest customer drops you and you go, why did I ever do this? And you go up and down like that. When you have a vision, a written definition of what success is 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, then you're not looking at the day to day. You're looking at this continuum and you're looking to say, are we making, you're never looking for perfection. You're looking for progress. Are we inching toward where we want to go? So the number one thing is to come up with that compelling vision that makes you want to get up in the morning and do this and excites you. And then the other is when you go to your business plan, which is not first, but the vision is first. But when you go to your business plan, I think that when I go and I talk to groups of entrepreneurs and people that want to start businesses, they always talk about access to capital, getting funding. And the message that I try to get across is money is easy to get. If you have a good idea, literally, no matter what the economic environment is like, people will throw money at you. Money is easy to get, almost too easy to get. It's hard to pay back. So when you think about your business plan, make sure you're thinking about how you're going to generate a profit and pay back the investments that you're going to ask people to make on you. It's too often business incubators measure success because ideas got funded. Success is when you've turned the idea, the opportunity into revenue, and it's been qualified by customers. And so focus on how you're going to pay back the investors, not on how you're going to get the investors to give you some money. So those two things, I think, would be the most important. Also, make sure that you have, you know, educated yourself and you have some level of financial intelligence. And this isn't, you know, that you understand derivatives on Wall Street. It's really basic net present value of money and, you know, food cost, you know, cost of doing business, just real basic things. That you have a good understanding of the vocabulary of finance. That would be the, you know, kind of three things.
Wow, those are three important, very important things that I think that people lose sight of. And they're not the ones that I think everyone would look at. And I just have loved this interview. You've given so much awesome information. And I run in a group where people are constantly saying to me, we're looking for investors. Do you know who could, you know, who would like to invest in this? Or we're looking for people. We're trying to raise money. And you're so right, because if they don't have an execution plan or how they're going to get that money back, it's that becomes their main focus. And that is a great piece of advice, because I see it all too often. Then they get the money because you're so focused on getting that money that you didn't put much energy or focus in how you're going to spend it. And then the next thing you know, the money's gone. You've got to pay the money back. The business hasn't really moved any more forward than where it was. And suddenly, they're basically back in the same exact position, only with this huge amount of debt, because they didn't spend as much energy on execution as they did on getting the money. So I
you're 100% correct there.
Wow. So great. So share with us some exciting things that you guys are working on right now. And then I want you to tell our listeners how they can find you. I know how to find you, but a lot of people listening to this around the country and even around the world are have no idea on how to find you.
Oh, well, if the name of the company is Zingerman's. And so anybody that wants to get a hold of me, paul@zingermans.com, send me your questions, drop me a note, send me your complaints, send me your if you've had a happy experience here, whatever you want, and I'd be happy to get back to you and answer your questions.
Great. And so what are some exciting things you guys have going on now?
Well, one really big thing that we've just rolled out and completed is we've come up with a hybrid form of employee ownership. So we, you know, we had created this organization where you could become a partner in it, but we wanted to be able to widen ownership within the organization. And so we came up with a plan, and I'm not going to go into all the details, but basically anybody that's been with us for 2 years can buy a share in what we call, it's called the Zingerman Experience, which is, it's a separate company. It's an LLC that owns the brand, the intellectual property. And you can buy a share in that for $1,000. And that entitles you to distributions every year that as a whole organization, we reach certain marks. And you can pay up front that $1,000, or you can, we'll finance it for you over 2 years with payroll deduction. And so you are actually own a share in Zingerman's. And every year that as a, you know, collectively we hit these marks, then there's distribution to all those folks. And in the first round of subscription, 204 folks signed up and bought a share in the organization. So close to 30% of the employees took advantage of that. And we were kind of blown away. We were hoping for 100. And so, you know, we are sharing ownership in the organization with the people that are working here. And that was really important to us. They have a salary, and in their business, they might have a bonus plan. Their business is going to have a gain sharing plan where when that specific business is beats their annual plan, there's a gain above that, and whatever that gain is, there's a sharing of that with the employees. And then in addition to that, now there's another way in which to get some additional income is through this ownership plan. So we're really excited about that.
That is great. Well, I just want you to know that this has been by far one of the most enjoyable and best interviews as far as content. I hope our listeners really sit down, listen to it, and then go back and listen to it again, because there were so many, many, many golden nuggets within this interview. And I just thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
It's been my pleasure. Time has flown. And happy to be part of this, and thanks for asking me to do this. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.